I'm Al McFarland. Welcome to The Conversation with Al McFarland. Glad to be here and glad to have you along as well. What a day, what a day, what a week. So much going on in the world. We're glad to have this opportunity to share thoughts, ideas, discussion, conversation with you. And as always, we want to deliver, create an opportunity for what we call robust conversation. Well, today, KFAI listeners and those connecting on our social media platforms, well, we want to hear from you. And drop us a note. If you're on the radio, thank you for being a supporter, a listener, but bring your voice to the conversation as well. You can do that by looking over at any of the YouTube or LinkedIn or Facebook platforms that we're streaming to right now. And in fact, we'd love to have you become a member or a subscriber, supporter, by going to YouTube.com/InsightNews and watching the program while just listening to it. That way you can also add comments, bring your voice. And if you want to join the program, we invite you to join the program as well. First of all, though, tell people that we're live right now here on KFAI and across our social media platforms, LinkedIn, Facebook, and YouTube, and ask people to join. Last week, we talked about a story that I have in this week's, yesterday's edition of Insight News, I think yesterday and last week, and that is about the challenge that is brewing at the state legislature, where the president of the Senate, Bobby Champion, is questioning initiatives to shift the providing direct appropriations to nonprofit organizations. Bobby Champion argues that the system proposed by the governor and the governor's response is proposal is in response to both national and I think Republican questioning about the fraud that's been documented, that's being adjudicated in Minnesota, well-known, well-documented. And the governor is proposing an end to direct appropriations to organizations and nonprofits as one way to provide greater accountability. The argument made by Senator Champion, as I understand it, and what my article says in Insight News, is that if there is a leak in the house, don't burn the house down, don't destroy the house, fix the leak. And so the system of making direct appropriations addressed the reality that there's a two-tiered system that allows well-resourced organizations, nonprofits, businesses, to have the ability to request and win competitive bids. But smaller organizations that are closer to the ground don't have the wherewithal to do the same. So he raises the question, ought we always ensure through the process of direct appropriations that organizations in community that in communities that have traditionally been underserved can have a chance to work on solving problems in their community using the resources of the state to do so? And your thoughts on that? I want you to, if you would, go to news.com. You'll see the story, the two stories there. One is a news story and one is an op-ed that I wrote. Perhaps I'll share again before this show is over today. I'm also concerned, and I want to know what your concerns are about some headlines in the country, in the community. I put together several clips of the programs I've been watching, and I want to share those with you. But I really, really, really want you to respond and to say how these things affect you. And the set I pulled together have to do with the war. The president has launched a war against Iran. He's working with the state of Israel, the nation of Israel, and Iran has responded. So what I want to do is sort of play some of these clips, 30 seconds each, 40 seconds each, and then get your idea, your thoughts, your feedback on where we are with our country's military action, the strikes against the nation of Iran, the possibility of that escalating, and what it means for the Middle East, for Africa, what it means for our own democracy. Well, I picked up one piece that features Stacey Abrams. I'm going to share my screen for those who are watching on social media, but you on radio will be able to hear this as well. And I'll play maybe a minute or so, or less than that, of Stacey Abrams warning that Trump's war on Iran is a threat to our democracy. This was made today. I'm only going to play the introduction. She has a full, long examination of the issue, but calling this play this one first, and we'll come back in after this and then do another one as well. And here it is. So what do you think? So first of all, comments on that. That's an opening comment from Stacey Abrams. I want to play a little bit more of that to get a sense of, like, she's saying that Trump's war on Iran is a threat to our democracy. I want to know what you think. Join me, join the conversation, put your comments in on the comment. Shout you out. Let us know where you're listening from, watching from, and let's have this conversation. Let's continue with a little more of that stream from Stacey Abrams. Let me load it up again. And, you know, it's hard to not feel overwhelmed right now. So much happening. And the key for me together. How do we figure out what the connection is, the through line for all of these? I'm going to play more of the Stacey Abrams report or comment. Here it is.
Ignored, and why this year's ceremony moves unmistakably political tones into stereo, from vampires to
So we'll come back to that. That's more of what she's doing. But there's another one I want you to look at real quick here, and let me pull that one up. This is Professor P.L.O. Lumumba. He's a person I've been listening to, fascinating orator, thinker, a lawyer out of Kenya. Here he is.
Questions and does not lend itself to easy answers, and in my view must be situated in the context of history. If you look at Iran, the Iran that we know now, we've got to go back to the 1920s when the Reza Pahlavi family became the dominating dynasty until the Reza Pahlavi, who lived in 1941, died powers the British and the Soviet Union for being not willing to do their bidding. But he was then succeeded by his son, Mohammad Shah Reza Pahlavi, who liberalized Iran in many ways and who was very compliant with the West. And of course, that then led to the emergence of the Ayatollahs and culminating in the 1979 emergence of the Ayatollahs and the abolition of the Pahlavi dynasty. And something begins to happen at that time because the Ayatollahs come in with a theocratic regime, which clearly states that they do not recognize the state of Israel, and that in fact this Israel must be wiped off the surface of the earth. And they say that this Zionist regime must actually go. So that is the official stated position of the Iran regime or the Tehran regime. And the fact that then they started enriching uranium, almost reaching weapon grade enrichment, then raise alarm, particularly in the United States of America and in Israel. And the argument that is being put forth by the Netanyahu regime is that they have credible evidence, or that they had credible evidence, that the Iranians had crossed the red line in terms of enrichment, and that they cannot allow the regime to have a nuclear weapon. It is instructive that at the time when the attack on Iran took place, there was a diplomatic effort, or there were diplomatic efforts, which were being mediated in Saudi Arabia and within that particular environment with a view to convincing the Iranians that they ought not uranium for non-peaceful purposes. And to the casual observers, like all of us, we thought that they were going on very well. At least when you listen to the President of the United States of America, one took the view that the negotiations would give birth to a result which would be acceptable to all, and the International Atomic Energy was supervised. But for some reason, in what in the eyes of many appears to be a unilateral decision by the Israelis, but what we now know, had the nod of the United States of America, there is a conflagration which has resulted in a tit for tat and which is affecting populations. We have seen in the last one week, the Israelis saying that they now have air domination over the whole of Tehran. We have seen the use of hypersonic missiles, which have hit Tel Aviv and have hit Haifa. And for the first time, we see a disruption of normal life in Israel, which had not taken place during the conflict in Gaza. And even when the Houthis were launching their ballistic missiles from Yemen.
So let me stop there and welcome in my friend, Jonathan Palmer. Jonathan, good afternoon. Welcome. Good to see you again, my friend. How you doing?
Doing pretty good. Al, very nice to be here with you and join you. Glad to be part of the conversation.
Clips I want to share. And I just wanted to set a ground for having a conversation. I hope that our listeners here on KFAI and those who are connecting with us across the various social media platforms will weigh in on this conversation as well. What is important to me, Jonathan, is that we talk. We simply have to talk. We have to have discussions, hard discussions, discussions, though, that are based on a shared belief that we all want peace in the world. We want the protection of children and families. We want the reduction, the lack of harm to people. We want people to have economies that work, economies that reflect and respect culture, legacy, history, family, and reflect the hope for the future for everybody on the planet. And I've just been, you know, doing deep dives every day, all weekend, almost overwhelmed by massiveness of this idea of the potential for a spreading war out of Iran in the Middle East. Here's a couple of more takes on it. Let me pull these up and then we'll come back and talk about it. I don't know if you know this sister. Her name is Larie Daniels-Faber. I've become a fan of her. She's on Sirius XM, channel 126, and it's called Urban View Radio. And she's one of several, I think, phenomenal Black or African American YouTube and social media and social radio hosts that provide analysis of national, local, international current affairs. And she had this to say about the she said NATO, this is her report from yesterday or this morning, the title of it is NATO enters the war ? The Iran conflict escalates, what it means for Africa. So let me see if I can get that on the screen here, and we'll listen to that. Let's see. Can you hear that, Jonathan?
I'm not hearing anything.
Okay. Let me come back to that in a couple of minutes when I, oh, there it is. See if we can get it started again. Okay, hold on a second. I'll try to go to the part where I wanted to share in her her comments. 1 second. Navigating to the right place. Let's see, three. Okay. Let's see if this will come through now.
Or three, to be specific. Now, in case you might be thinking that the people I'm talking to have lost a few of their marbles, which I actually think has happened, you should also know that they were told this directly by their president. Listen to Donald Trump. Yes, you're going to hear him. Listen to Donald Trump in his own words as he talks about war and how he is not going to do it. Let's hear it.
I will tell you, you're not going to have a war with me, and you're not going to have a third world war with
me. Oops. I turned it off by mistake.
Hey, that I can tell you.
That said that, huh? Yeah. I don't know. Maybe he forgot. It's possible he forgot, because he certainly seems to have not been remembering in remembrance that, of that when he decided to make the decisions that were made over this weekend, if he actually was the one making the decisions. One of the questions that I know a lot of people have had is why this war and why now? And frankly, that really depends on who you ask. Now, if you ask the Christians, not the Black Christians who are actually followers of Jesus, not that the actual Christians who actually believe in the word of Jesus. I'm talking about the white Christian nationalists. If you ask the white Christian nationalists why this war and why now, the answer may be so far back in history, it might surprise you. They want to go back to the book of Revelations. You should know that right now it's being reported that in the Pentagon, this war with Iran is being portrayed as a biblical war, a war that is going to bring about the rapture of the church, because it's going to bring Jesus back. Because you got to remember, this country is led not just by white narcissists. It's also led by white Christian nationalists who actually believe that the book of Revelations is a prophecy. Now, I am about to step on some religious toes. I'm going to be kind about it, but I just need you all to know that when you are someone who only reads the Bible and you are not a scholar as to how the Bible came to be, you will believe anybody's interpretation about the Bible, because...
Let me stop there with that. And let me try one more clip, Jonathan. All of this is fascinating. And we did that one already. Okay, I think that's all I have right now. so let me stop the sharing. And Jonathan, me and you, thanks again, brother, for being here. Good to see you. So I see you're wearing some nice hardware there. What's going on?
So I am in a transitional care unit right now. I'm recovering from spinal surgery. So I had a thing called spinal stenosis that got diagnosed in January. And so I had surgery in February.
Okay. Well, thank you for it.
I've had to learn, you know, use my hands and things like that. So this is right now to keep everything in place and not to make any wrong moves at any point.
All right.
I can still talk, I can still think, and being on this show is one of the things that I love the most. So I'm very glad to be to discuss this with you.
Thank you. Well, let me do this. I'm going to switch my internet link from one to another. Let me have you take a few minutes while I do that, just to give your reaction over the weekend as you watched the Iran invasion unfold. Were you surprised, first of all? Were you expecting it? How did you put that in a line of activity with what happened recently with Venezuela? And so what are the general thoughts? I'm going to take myself off the screen and have you just share your thoughts, okay?
Okay.
Go ahead.
So what was a little funny about this was all of this took place at the same time I was moving from the hospital to the transitional care unit. So when I woke up, there was this whole thing about how the U.S. had already invaded and gone into, how the war had started. And it took them, you know, all of 5 minutes to go ahead and name it as a war, as they did. And listening to that sister, she was spot on. The reasons for this invasion keep changing and evolving. I heard Marco Rubio talking about how the whole idea was we attack them preemptively because if somebody else attacked them, they would attack us. And you can't help but start thinking about sci-fi movies like Tom Cruise and Minority Report and the pre-crime where you go ahead and you eliminate the threat before the threat even exists. This whole idea of we're going to go ahead and attack them just in case they're going to attack us. This is about regime change. Oh, but it's not about regime change. This is about defending the United States, but it's about freeing the people. It's, you know, spin the wheel and throw a dart and pick a reason. And they can't settle on one. And right now, there's one of the watchdog groups which is reporting out they were nowhere near close to developing enriched uranium or any other materials they needed to create a nuclear bomb. And so what you have here is a war of convenience and a war of wealth. You have what has been happening with Israel, and I think it's really important to make a distinction between the state of Israel and the Jewish people. Mm-hmm. That I have a lot of Jewish friends who are very upset with what has been happening with the state of Israel and with the government there and the actions they're choosing, especially with Netanyahu. And so it's important that we don't confuse and conflate Jewish people with the Israeli state, because those are separate. Some and people may be on both sides.
But even important, Jonathan, to recognize that within the Israeli state, there are a variety and competing points of view. And so we're really talking about the regime that's in power in Israel right now, because one could argue that that doesn't represent the sum total of all of the Israeli people who are diverse more than we think. So make that cut. Right. It's like saying that Trump represents all of America, and we know that he doesn't.
Exactly.
He doesn't. So the same dynamic and tension exists there as well. And I appreciate the fact that you want to be very clear about not conflating the rich history, legacy, and presence of the Jewish people, you know, in Israel and around the world, with what is happening in a state that has a situation that's similar to ours, in that its leader is at risk of judgment from his people. And this escalation is one way to deflect from the consequence
and doesn't ripple
of wrongdoing. And what is that?
Right.
And so why are some people calling this the Epstein War, referring to Trump's rush into supporting? So I'll stop there. Go ahead and go.
Well, and that's exactly what this has become. I mean, I've heard things called Operation Epstein files or Operation Distract from the Epstein files. You know, what you're seeing consistently is the moment something comes up that is going to draw attention either towards the Epstein files or draw attention towards how bad Donald Trump is doing in the polls, how bad the Republican is doing. It's no coincidence that all in the same weekend, they've tried to go ahead and figure out ways to take control of the elections next year, that more files have come out from the Epstein point. One that is rumored to have allegations of rape and sexual assault of a teenager by the president that has been hidden by his staff, and that you have suddenly we're invading Iran under the pretense of they were creating enriched uranium and nuclear bombs when they don't have the capabilities to do that. And now you're seeing the fallout where people are being attacked all around that region. And the bases of the U.S. that are around in that region, the embassies are being attacked, and other countries who had nothing to do with this are now starting to raise the alarm. You know, the United Kingdom, some of the others, because the impact this is having on oil prices, on supplies around the world, on the dangers of bases in their own countries being hit. Iran is, you know, attacking every place in order to bring in, you know, more people to the conflict, to raise this larger. And Donald Trump and maybe Netanyahu have overstepped, because they thought they would just go in here, destroy everything, and be hailed as champions, or at least distract attention away. And now there's all these unintended consequences of other countries being impacted and drawn into this, who are going to put pressure on the United States to stop this, not join in and rally behind them.
So what do you think is going to be the outcome? I fear that, you know, they said at first a day or two. Now, then they said, you know, a week. And now Trump is saying it could last 4 or 5 weeks. And he's also saying, oh, we've got the capacity to carry this forward for a longer period of time. Where do you see it going?
Oh, you're talking about the same President Trump that said we're not going to do any more forever wars, and we're not going to do any more foreign wars, and that Barack Obama, because he couldn't negotiate with Iran, would start a war with Iran, and that Kamala Harris would be the one to get us involved. That Donald Trump? Okay. Just making sure I'm talking about the same thing here. This thing is going to, if it does not get snipped in the next 2 weeks, meaning that pressure from our allies across the world, which we've already alienated, or pressure from within our own government, which has been ineffective and asleep at the wheel. I mean, the fact that the president has just gone ahead and declared war and bypass Congress, and they're not doing anything except having a vote on it, is This thing is through this year, and I would not doubt that it goes all the way up through the midterms. You know, right now, Donald Trump is thinking he is a wartime president, and that is the image that he can go ahead and share it and marshal the troops. But he's forgetting the people that supported him didn't want any more foreign wars, didn't want any wars, and now their sons and daughters are going to be the ones that get to be the boots on the ground. And he is going to very quickly, he's already in negative approval ratings in every category you look at. No matter which poll you look at, he is negative by the people who used to support him. I saw one that I think was people who had watched the State of the Union who were regular Republicans had like negative 47, you know, the equivalent of his position as president. That's how bad he is doing. And so he's flailing and trying to go ahead and draw this out. And he'll continue to draw it out until he can find a way to try to make a positive outcome. Right now, he's got no way out of this that makes him look good. And that's what he'll do, is he'll play this out and draw this out until he can figure out an exit strategy that is a win for him. And the American people are going to pay the price.
So what could that be?
As well as other people. I'm sorry, I should also say the Iranian people. I mean, this is innocent Iranians on the ground. There's innocent people in Saudi Arabia, in other parts of the world, who are now collateral damage because one man does not want to admit to the crimes that he committed.
And so there's no indication that he's going to be willing to admit ever. And you say he'll try to keep moving until he finds a way out. Is there a way out? I don't know that there is. And what I think that means is that he'll try to find ways to keep ratcheting up the anxiety, the crisis, the emergency state that would put him in a position to appear in his own mind justified in altering either the midterms or certainly the general elections come 2028. And if either of those scenarios happen, you know, some people in my circles are saying that his effort, as you mentioned, to try to nationalize the elections is an attempt to gain control and to steal even the midterms. What's going to happen?
Yeah. And right now, we're at a really pivotal point because there are a lot of efforts. The president has his fingers in too many pies right now. And that's just it, is that there are all these ways in which they're trying to go ahead and maintain control and maintain what they have in terms of the current grift and the money-making schemes and the advantages and the truth being hidden away. But it's spread too far. That's the problem, is they went too far. They went to Venezuela and took over Venezuela. And now he has listed himself as the president of Venezuela, temporary president. But now we got a war in the Middle East that is spreading rapidly. Then there's controversy at home because of how he treated the U.S. women's hockey team. I mean, they are one of the best.
We lost your sound for a second. I'm Alan McFarland. Go ahead.
And so what you have is this was initially done to try to distract people. You know, if there's too many things going on, you can't pay attention to all of them. But I think they've lost control of the story. And all these things going on, they're now having to deal with and try to, you know, put a clamp down on, but they don't have enough pieces on the board to be able to do that because they keep spreading themselves thin and not realizing when you send, you know, the National Guard to states that are doing nothing but standing up for their rights, and you use ICE to go ahead and kill U.S. citizens and have them spread across the country doing that, you don't have enough power to go ahead and maintain the military and maintain all the pieces that you're trying to do. So they're playing, he thinks he's playing 3D chess, and really he's playing 5D chess.
Mm-hmm. We lose your signal for a second. I lost your second for a second.
I think that, where this goes is there's going to be an opportunity for not just the Democrats, but I think just any right-thinking people, anybody's Republicans who were tired of being labeled as the bad party or who are tired of being a part of the conspiracies. I think, you know, independents, leftists, anybody tired of all the mud that the U.S. has been dragged through has an opportunity here to go ahead and seize on that, continue to press for truth and continue to press for justice and for the things that come out. But most importantly, it's our elected leaders have to take the stands that they need to. They have to hold accountable the president and other elected officials. They have to take action. And they have to. Down in some regards is very much right. The choice they made, the decision, the tariffs was a really good one. It's an important one. And that's another front that he's now having to fight on. And he doesn't have the control that he thought. So I think this ends up blowing up and exploding with all of these things coming to a head at one point, you know, in the course of this year or early beginning of the next, and that it all collapses in on itself. And I'm hopeful that our government can survive that.
I think your description is more optimistic than mine. As dire a picture as you have painted just now, that is still more optimistic than I'm able to pull up, and I call myself the optimist, you know, because I'm looking at the doomsday scenario. And for me, the doomsday scenario is that they barrel headlong into their actual intent of consolidating and seizing permanent control and permanent power in this country, and in the doing, attempt to establish a permanent world order that basically, you know, keeps the U.S. and Europe as solidly as the global North in control, with adversaries being both Russia and Asia, China. And the sense is if they can manage the globe with just those power centers and everything else subservient, then that is a scenario for the future. I think that's a bad scenario. It's one that I fear. And it's one where the storytelling, the narrative creation, tries to glorify or build on the sense of manifest destiny from way back when, build on the sense of white supremacy, of some sense that there's a divine order. That's what Larry Daniels Favors was saying about these people believe that what they're doing is biblical in nature. I hadn't heard that until I heard her say it, but it frightens me that when people wrap themselves in that cloth, that means that they're willing to and ready to die for what they believe is a belief, and that belief system ties into their also stated sense of not wanting to be replaced. They feel that the world and that nature is moving towards the replacement of whiteness, and so they feel an obligation to fight that. And I think that that is misguided. I think that at the end of the day, the solution and the movement towards us being better human beings is to understand that freedom requires all of us to be here all the time. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Al,
yeah.
Why would they be worried about being replaced? What would be so wrong with being a minority? What would be so wrong with being part of a world order where they weren't the majority? Is there something that has been wrong about that, or that mm-hmm. maybe people have been treated a certain way mm-hmm. that they fear will become how they are treated? And then mm-hmm. That's really strange. But what you're raising, you're right, it's a nightmare scenario, and mm-hmm. it's a worse one. I have hope that that won't happen because of the fact that, one, I don't think that all of the people in that group are on the same page. Right. I don't think that there are enough of them to really drive that piece. And I think that they radically underestimate the forces that will stand against them for justice and for freedom. I look at the MAGA group. Mm-hmm. The MAGA group is so much under this misunderstanding that we're still in the 1950s, mm-hmm. that they can go ahead and use white as right and take action based upon that, and they will get the same reception that we were forced to give them in the 50s. This is no longer that time period. And what you find all too often is racist white people who decide to make moves like that and say the wrong thing, thinking that they can just get away with it, and they end up getting hit with an iced tea can, or they end up going ahead and being broken down by a Jasmine Crockett who apart. So when I think about that scenario, I think there is a lot more of us of all colors, all backgrounds, all ethnicities that are not going to stand for that. I mean, the continent of Africa alone has way more people and way more freedom fighters that would unite. And along with the US, those of us who are on the right side of things, I think that they believe that they could do that, exactly what you're talking about. I think they've counted their chickens before they've hatched.
The problem is that they also have demonstrated their ability to create a lot of destruction. And so look at history, look at the movement of this European idea across North America and the genocide, the annihilation of the indigenous populations. Look at the genocide, annihilation of indigenous populations in South America. Look at what this movement, this idea, this supremacist idea did to the attempted depletion of human capital, of human beings from the continent of Africa, the movement of these people across the ocean in the transatlantic slave trade. The beauty, I think, mm-hmm. you're saying this, is that as human beings, we continue to reflect and reveal, demonstrate a resilience that is irrepressible at the end of the day. And if we've resisted and risen above all of the atrocities of the last half millennia, certainly we will continue to resist that in the future, moving towards the idea of a humanity that values all of us, and that all of us want to be connected in and through and to, and not in a way that requires that we hoard resources and that we hoard power and vest the power in the hands of the few, with the strategy that marginalizes the many, downpresses the many. So, you know, I was thinking, Jonathan, you know, let's pivot a little bit towards Minnesota and the fact that ICE theoretically has diminished its footprint here. I want to, especially for our KFAI audience here, shout out all of the Minnesotans who took to the street. And I'm speaking to KFAI members in particular, because I think our community, the KFAI listeners, were the front line of the resistance to ICE. So if you're listening anywhere on KFAI, KFAI.org, hats off to you. My thanks to you, my gratitude to you for standing up, for braving wind chill of 40 and 50 below to protest the presence of ICE, the assault on immigrants and on communities of color, and for demonstrating that we can do better and be better. And what I have to say in praise of Minnesotans, Jonathan, is that it gives me hope when I hear, and I'm, as I'm monitoring the national, international news, people are referring to what they did in Minnesota, what the people did in Minnesota to stand up against fascism, against racism, against this idea of white supremacy, against the Trump administration, against ICE and the policy of deporting people, dislodging people who are seeking freedom, who are contributing to community and society, against the labeling of human beings as trash, you know, as non-human or as threats or as criminals. And, you know, the problem is the people doing the labeling are the criminals. That is the criminal enterprise, those who are attempting to paint the rest of us in that light. So hats off to Minnesotans. And I, if, you know, again, if you're here and want to jump in, agree with me or disagree with me, love to have your comment. We're streaming live to Facebook and to LinkedIn and to YouTube, the Inside News YouTube channel, also to the Black Press of America YouTube channel. If you want to comment on this, I'd love to have your comments and your thoughts on this. Jonathan, let me say a shout out to Joe Lewis. Joe Lewis, put a thumbs up. Joe, thank you just for acknowledging this conversation. And again, wherever you are, if you want to join the conversation, the QR code is at the top of the screen. We can bring you into the conversation. Jonathan and I would both enjoy having the conversation with you, whether you agree with us or not, because we think that even having polar opposite points of view, and it having the chance to express those is the right thing to do. So with that, Jonathan, did you get the Insight News article for Monday where I talked about Bobby Champion challenging Governor Walz on funding pivot? Did you look at that yet?
I have not seen that as yet.
Let me pull it up.
That's top of my reading list, though.
Well, let me share part of it I shared yesterday, but put it on screen, Jared. Please. And if you would, so I'll just show it and talk about it first. This is Monday's Inside News. The headline is Champion Challenges Governor Walz's Funding Pivot. And it talks about essentially the governor, kind of in response to all the pressure from the administration and probably from Republicans, you know, sort of bending or folding, saying that, oh, we got to figure out how to prevent fraud. And his solution is one that doesn't fit the problem. And so this story goes into that. But scroll down, if you would, to the bottom of this page, Jared, because I want to read again the short commentary that I wrote. Pull it up, and you can make it a little bit bigger so I can read it. And people have heard me say this before. This is what I call an Al McFarlaneism. They get the money. We get the misery. So how do we get to where I can see the whole thing on the screen at one time? So let me just read this. So the news coming out of St. Paul this week feels like a betrayal of the very communities that state leaders claim to protect. while Governor Tim Walz and the Trump administration engage in a high-stakes game of political chicken over fraud prevention, grassroots organizations in Twin Cities and beyond are the ones being lined up for the fiery squad. Governor Walz's proposal to end direct legislative grants is not a strategic reform. It is a structural eviction of Black excellence from the public square. By framing this as a response to the Feeding Our Future scandal, the governor is using the criminal actions of a few to justify the systemic exclusion of the many. Champion is right. If you scroll over a little bit, Senator Bobby Joe Champion is right to stand in the gap. Kudos to Bobby Joe Champion. He understands that the governor seemingly does not. Direct appropriations are not the source of fraud. They are the source of life for the under-resourced communities. There are no allegations of fraud that involve an organization who receives a direct appropriation. None. To make ending direct appropriations as a part of the anti-fraud package suggests that direct appropriations contributed to the state's fraud crisis. It is analogous to a man passing gas and blaming the dog. So Champion said this week, I will not vote for and will actively rally support against any bill that includes an end to direct appropriation. Scroll down, Jared, please. I am not willing to blame avenues used to invest in communities across our next column and down a little bit, yeah, across our state that are not the source or contributor to fraud. For decades, I write, Inside News has chronicled how Black-led nonprofits and small businesses operate on the front lines, often doing the heavy lifting that state agencies are too detached to handle. I say that we don't just promote the idea, the efficacy, and necessity of culturally centered services. We promote sovereignty, equity, and accountability. I say that we are the trusted messengers advancing the idea that our community must follow the money, challenging and exposing institutional injustices. And as I've often said, they get the money, we get the misery. That's a quandary. The governor's competitive bidding pivot assumes a level playing field exists. We know that it doesn't. Because when you require a 50-page technical RFP for every dollar, you aren't selecting scroll down, please. I can't see it. Okay. The best service provider. You are, next column, selecting the best grant writer. Large legacy institutions with multi-million dollar endowments will win every time. Grassroots leaders, those with the relational authority to stop a bullet or feed a family in crisis, will be locked out because they don't have a compliance department. We are told this is about quote unquote transparency, but where was the transparency when federal judges had to block the Trump administration from halting Medicaid and SNAP benefits funds earlier this year? The state is being squeezed by a retribution campaign from Washington, and rather than holding the line, the governor is offering up our community's lifelines as a peace offering. That is the problem. We agree that accountability is sacred. Public service both is and requires stewardship. But you do not stop a leak by tearing down the house. You fix the pipes. If the governor wants to fight fraud, he should invest in building the capacity of local leaders to handle rigorous reporting without stripping them of their autonomy. He should listen to Senator Champion, who has spent a stellar career in public service, standing shoulder to shoulder with us. Governor Walz, we are not the fraudsters you're looking for. We're the partners that you cannot afford to lose. Do not let quote unquote accountability become a code word for abandonment. That's my editorial. Jonathan, what do you think?
I think that is
better and different. You don't have to agree with me at all.
I not only agree with you, Al. I want to add a little piece to that.
Go ahead.
One that is beautifully written and excellently makes the point. This is one of sickens me about public dealing with local government. In 2020, the world shut down. The community that was there to save our state and our country was the nonprofit community.
Your voice is fading.
People would have died in greater numbers if it hadn't.
No, Jonathan, we've got a connection problem because your voice is fading in and out. Let me just continue while maybe your signal.
Can you hear a little better?
Now I do. Yeah, try it
again. Is it coming in better?
Yes.
What I'm saying is that it was the nonprofit community that saved this state and this country, and that people wouldn't have had food, children would have been lost. And yet, once we get through the crisis, just like we do with communities of color, we turn around and blame the people who have actually been there. Is there fraud? Of course there's fraud. There's always going to be bad people and bad actors, but that's not restricted to the nonprofit community. You can turn around and look at the state legislature, and I can point to many a person who has done way more fraud, but which they do not spend the same amount of time arguing and making comments about it. We do more with less in the nonprofit community than any other sector that exists. And
no, we lost you. We lost
more you. Supporting us, more standing by us the way Champion has done. If more of that was happening, more of the social problems that exist would get addressed much more effectively. Our nonprofit sector is there to help and to support, and there is no reason to be targeting that. You want to talk about fraud? Let's talk about fraud. You want answers? Let's have answers, but let's have answers across the board. And let's not pinpoint the one sector that has done the most to try to address what is happening in this world in a strategic and helpful way.
Great comment. Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you so much. Well, love to have our audience weigh in again. If you have a point of view, either positive or negative, agree or disagree, we treasure your voice and your point of view, your opinion. We'd love to have you join this conversation. We're actually at the end of this program, but as always, let's see, I've got a note here from Jared, open chat. Yeah, we're down to the last minute. Jonathan, as always, it's good to be with you, and thank you so much for your contribution. Get well, my friend, and
thank you.
Hopefully you'll keep recovering from your surgery and be back in full swing sooner than later. And thank you so much. Thanks again to people who have commented. Brother Anura Siasar, you're always on the show and giving us a thumbs up. Thank you for that. We're going to continue focusing on this, and I want to invite people to read Insight News. Go to insightnews.com and read the story yourself. We're doing a lot of legislative reporting and City Hall reporting in Insight. The digital edition especially is expanded. Final comment, Jonathan, one more thing you want to say?
I just want to do a special shout out to all of the local artists who have been taking the Minnesota loon.
You're listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3.